Hello, and welcome back to the Dungeons & Dragons Podcast UK. My name is Yasmin, and I will be the DM.
Hi, my name is Samantha. I play Laura Greyveil, and she is a sorceress from the province of Nevalia.
Hello, I'm Colin, and I play Quinn de Greymont, a paladin from Flarbon in the province of Gavinny.
Hi, I'm Ryan. I play Ogvar Shawfort, a goat-herding, mushroom-seeking ranger from Kessig.
Ogvar visited Eliza Stack, where their handy haversack was alleviated of his armour. With Alora's fenced fine gems, a little artistic flair, and some very fancy forging, it would be back to the blacksmith's the following afternoon for Orland to try on his new threads. Esther had clearly enjoyed her secretive afternoon spa as she sat in the tavern wearing naught but fresh towels and flip-flops. It was a fashion faux pas that would never fly, but she cared not. And after being roused by the ranger, Elora was still in the throes of an existential crisis. As the suspicious sorceress returned to the bar, she carved out some space, sitting well away from her companions in a somewhat contemplative stupor. As the workers wandered in from a hard day in the fields, Mary had laid on a feast to feed all of the townsfolk. A little later, the mayor made his way over to introduce himself to the heroes of the hour, and keen to keep the discussion on the down low, the five relocated to the relative privacy of the kitchens. Episode 110, Local Legends and Rumoured Ruins.
Vampire spawn, you say? I can't say that's common for around here. We have, and he puts his hand over his heart and looks up to Avacyn, you would say. Bless Avacyn, but we've never really had, aside from the usual kind of problems that small towns face, but we haven't really ever had anything as sinister as a spawn before.
I must ask, Richard, have any of your other townsfolk gone missing? Because when we found Brady, he wasn't the only person there. There were various, for want of a better description, cages which had held various occupants. One of which was an old man who was in an absolutely terrible state, and despite the fact that we tried to save him, he really was too far gone, so whilst he was appreciative that we got him out of his, well, cell, I suppose, but he was so emaciated that, well, he just died right in front of us. We did, Quinn here did read him his last rites, and at least, well, he went peacefully in the end, but were you missing anybody else? Would that have been somebody from the village?
Richard reaches out and he squeezes your hand. Thank you for ensuring that poor soul found his way to Avacyn's embrace. But he's not one of ours, unfortunately. Ivona and Brady were the first people to go missing. We've had animals killed and taken, but I don't know who that old man could have been. There are obviously the kind of wild folk who live around the area and in the forested regions, but we're really kind of too far south for civilised people. He could have been living rough, I suppose, or a hunter or something or the other, but he's not one of ours, no.
Well, we can give you an indication of where this place is. So if you have anybody that, you know, or you have any way of contacting some guard from a nearby town, or I don't know what you put into place, but we can tell you where this place is. If we couldn't bring the old man with us, we did just lay him out on an altar, but he could do with a decent burial, so I think somebody needs to go and clear the place out. It's not very pleasant.
Right, okay, well, I'll, if you can show me on a map, I'll we'll sort something out at some point.
Yeah, we'll sort that out later on for you.
Yeah, so, no. Is there anything else to help you with, or...?
Well, yes, there may be. We were originally travelling up this way, because, while we're on it, we're travelling on outwards further east towards... towards the Wizard's Tower, and but we did pick up a job in Selhoff. We saw a job on the guild's board, and said you needed some help with some issues you were having with your livestock, which may well be intertwined with what we've already spoken about.
Yes, I suspect it is. To be honest, it does sound mighty familiar. We've had a couple of livestock, cows, pig or two. Don't think we've had any chickens go though. There was the one dog, family dog, which we have found in the fields. Just dehydrated, I guess. Looked like they'd been attacked by something, and yeah, dead.
Look, Richard, we are passing through. We're actually on a journey, an onward journey of our own. We're not going to be here for too long. We were planning on stopping in here, but then when our owner and when we found Brady, well, that just gave us another reason to. You know, we had to come here anyway, and it was a good opportunity to bring them home to their family. We're not going to be around too long, but if there's something that you can do, if you can give us information, we can try and help you with this problem before we leave. But we kind of need some clues, something concrete to go on.
I'm afraid there's not much in the way, which is... mostly why we sent out the request for the guild, and it was purely trying to figure out what in Avacyn's name was going on. As I said, you know, we find the animals in the morning. They're all shrunken and shriveled and no fluid left in their body. There's a couple of bite marks in you know, neck area or throat area. And that's... I really can't tell you more.
Does it happen roughly about the same time, say, every moon cycle? Or is it just like you'll get two in a week and then nothing for a month?
Yeah, it's a bit odd. We had... first of all, it was... a cow. And then... there was a little while. A couple of weeks, maybe? And then it was a pig and a dog in the same week. And then it was a little while, and then we had another cow go. And then it was a bit longer. And then we had another cow go.
Right, so what that would suggest to me is that it's almost like a feed. What I would say is that it's filling up, shall we say, on something's filling up on the fluids. And when it starts to get low or desperate or whatever, it comes back. And obviously a pig and a dog Wouldn't have much fluid as a cow, so need to come back, either take both at the same time to make it up.
Yeah, that would make sense, wouldn't it?
So, when was the last one done, did you say?
A couple of days ago now.
Right, so there might not be...
Three.
And that was a cow?
Yeah.
Did you? So it might be another week or so before the next attack.
But then we had Brady and Ivona taken. Not long after that.
Right. Okay.
Do you even think that Brady and Ivona are related to the animals? Because, I mean, they weren't killed, thank Havison. They were gone.
No.
Yes, well, no, they weren't killed yet.
Yeah, but it did look like puncture wounds on Brady, which we healed, and that old man was emancipated, and he also...
Emaciated. Not emancipated.
Oh, well, emaciated.
He was free of legal obligation.
Yes. But, you know, he was, worse for wear, shall we say, and he had puncture wounds as well. In fact, all those bodies had puncture wounds.
Well, Kieran, I'm not being funny, but we, with the greatest respect to these people, we've got an onward journey to deal with. And, you know, if it's hit and miss, I don't see how we can, short of sitting up for a night, maybe a couple of nights, there's not a lot we can do. I mean...
Well, if it's only just fed and it's every couple of weeks...
Yeah, I mean,
we're halfway. Maybe if on our way back we can...
Well, that's if we even come back this way. On a brief... Okay. No, it's different direction. Totally. We've got to head over into Kessig after that.
Right.
So we'll be...
Yeah, we're there, but we're somewhere around this region.
Yeah, we're on a peninsula. There's literally no other way back other than through this way.
Yeah, we've got to come back roughly this way because we've got to go to there.
Where is Ironwick on that map?
I don't think it's...
Well, that's what I mean. I'm not sure it's even...
But that's...
Stagwick.
Yeah.
That's Selhoff. Turn around. That's Selhoff. So it's...
Oh.
It's, you know what I mean? It's...
We don't know. It's it... But you said it was in the marshy-ish area.
So Stagwick is roughly halfway, or a little less than halfway, between Selhoff and Jemmick's Tower.
Well... Yeah, I mean, maybe on our way back.
Yeah, we can pop back in to see.
Yeah, see if we can come across anything. And it's going to be a bit like sticking a needle in a haystack, to be honest.
Well, we can ask. We can see, you know, we can decide then. But we need to get to the tower and back first.
I think so. I think we, you know, if this thing is only feeding every couple of weeks or every few days or something, we need to. We can't sit here. We have things that we must do.
If the last one was a cow, and it is, seems to be every couple of weeks, we should be able to get to the tower and back and deal.
Well, that depends on what happens when we get down there.
Well, obviously, I don't think we can stay here for a couple of weeks.
We need to think about moving out tomorrow.
Well, we've just got to get the baked goods, and we've got to wait for Orland's chainmail.
And when did she say that would be ready again?
It would be probably tomorrow afternoon.
Yeah.
So, Marky, we'll stay tomorrow and fresh the day after tomorrow. Go.
Yeah.
Bright and early.
Yeah, I would say so. If you want to do some investigations and you fancy a night up, well, you could have a look, but, you know... I don't know, Kieran. I don't know.
Well, that's fine. No, I mean, if you want to have a bit of a jawn around tonight,
yes, I think I'd quite like to do that.
We can
a bit of civil duty type thing.
You know, we haven't been exactly pushing ourselves the last day or so, so, you know, should be able to get a sleep in afterwards.
Sounds fair.
Yeah.
Sounds fair.
I mean, you ladies could come with us, or...
Yeah, no, I'm up for that. We've had a bit of rest, and then, as you say, we could get some rest in the morning.
Yes.
Oh, sounds like a jolly good time.
And then...
Something different, Esther.
Oh, well then.
Yes, and then...
Reminds me of prowling round the streets of Drunel in the middle of the night. Waiting for all sorts of...
Oh, well, that's a story that...
Waiting for all sorts of spooky things to lurk in the corners and the shadows. She looks quite animated.
Well, that's... Well, Esther, that sounds like a tale that you can tell me maybe tonight when we're doing what we're doing.
Oh, yes, plenty of things go bump in the dark.
Oh.
You are in the Heart and Hearth, the centre of Stagwick Town. It is a busy evening. The pub is packed. You see the farmer type people dressed in very rough, dirty clothing. You see people who've dressed up or perhaps gone home to get cleaned up before they've gone to the pub. They're dressed in, you know, fairly simple clothing, but it's clean, it's you know, warm, and it looks, you know, like decent clothing. The room is absolutely buzzing. The fire pit, which sits in the middle, this long kind of trough, is merrily crackling away with the roast boar spinning on a spit above it. And you hear the odd hiss and sizzle as fat drips off of it and lands on hot coals below. The room is full of noise. You can hear someone playing a fiddle, albeit not very well, but they're playing a fiddle. It's a jaunty tune, jolly tune, and it's just generally this lovely atmosphere. You have children running through the pub itself, playing hide and seek, running under tables, and it's just overall this really lovely warm atmosphere. Everything's kind of suffused with this kind of golden glow from the candles which hang above your heads on these beautifully crafted antler chandeliers. The mead and the alcohol is flowing freely, and there's a lot of chatter, and it's clearly a cause for celebration. The news of Ivona and Brady's safe return has spread very quickly, and you see the mayor himself, Richard, Ivona and Brady's grandfather, winding his way through tables and giving people a pat on the back, accepting a toast from a wooden mug which you know he clatters, and you get this very hollow sound as the liquid goes sloshing. And yeah, it's a nice evening. Outside you see kind of dusk, you see bats flitting around through the windows. And what are you doing?
Alora is going to she's going to grab Richard, the mayor, and she is going to ask him about that she'd been told in Selhoff that there is some kind of ruins with a reputation of sorts, apparently just outside of town. And she's going to ask him whereabouts it's located outside of town, and perhaps for a little basic background on that, what why it has a reputation, what the problem with the ruins actually is.
Okay. So you catch Richard as he passes and you pose your question to him. And I'm just gonna make a quick check here. Oh. Okay, yeah. So as you ask this question, you notice almost like a hush falls over the crowd, or at least the people in the nearby area. Conversations cease, and the people around you, probably a couple of middle-aged men, quite dirty from the work in the fields, you know, happily supping away on a pint of ale or mead, they pay closer attention to you, and they turn from their conversations, spin around on bar stools, and kind of watch, and almost like a ripple effect, as the conversation around you hushes and falls silent. People further out in the room turn towards you, and they in turn fall silent. So it's like this kind of ripple effect throughout the room.
Alora's aware of this. She casts a weather eye towards Ogvar and Kirin to the one side, and she kind of looks out the side of her eye around the room, just turning her head ever so slightly, but then she's going to just return her focus to the mayor.
Yeah, so Richard looks at you, and he gives you quite a considering look. It's this wary, kind of watchful look. He's weighing you up. He's very clearly looking at you and just taking a brief moment to just consider. So without saying anything, he pulls up a chair. There's a table, around table next to you. He pulls a chair up, sits down, turning the chair towards you. He makes a gesture towards the barmaid, and he pulls from the inside of his jacket pocket, he pulls a pipe, which, as you sit there watching, or stand there watching him, he takes a decent minute to pop some tobacco in there, light it, give it a good couple of puffs. You know, he bangs it out on the table first of all to empty it. And
Alora will instinctively look in the air just to see if there are any animals. And then she's just going to dispel that thought.
Yeah. So he pops the pipe into his mouth. He gives a couple of puffs, puffs on it to make sure it gets going properly. And he begins to speak. And the whole room is almost kind of pulled in closer. People from the back corners of the room have left their seats and they've crowded in closer. And you've almost now got this semicircle around him. I say semicircle because this central trough where the roasting pit is in the way. And everyone's kind of crowded around. And he tells you the story of Stonewell Hall. He starts the story by telling you that Stonewall Hall is located on the hill to the west of the town. So as you come in, it's on your left. Far above, through the trees, and on top of the hill, there once stood a proud manor house. The manor house was once the home to a kind family. The father, mother, and three young children, all fairly close in age. And they once lived in the area many, many years ago, decades and decades ago. And he tells this story with this reminiscent tone. It's clearly something that he's remembering that was told to him and this story was told to him as perhaps even a child. It carries that kind of weight to it, and you hear, as he's speaking to you, you see people around the room like, nodding or shaking their heads at certain points. You hear mutters of, that's not how my dad told me that. It's clearly this story which has been passed down word of mouth. And the story goes that this family living above the town, they were proud of their heritage and proud of their ancestral home, rumoured to have been built by generations back of this family. And with the times getting darker and darker, they refused to move into the town. The offer of, joining the town properly, living within the town, within the palisade walls, was given many times. But being proud of their home and being confident in the strength of their own walls, they declined the offer. They should still interact with the townspeople and go into the town regularly. But they didn't want to move, they didn't want to leave where they lived. The family had a small number of servants, a maid, a butler and a cook as well, who all resided in the house, in the servants' quarters. And this is quite a big ruins. He describes it to you, and it was, you know, once a magnificent house, a beautiful two-story house made of stone, and it was clearly like a small little manor. And the story goes that the one day they didn't see the family, and usually servants would come into town to collect provisions, collect supplies, and they didn't see anyone. Brushing it off as perhaps, you know, they didn't need anything, or perhaps they were doing something. The people of the town obviously were aware of it, but didn't really think it was anything to be cautious about. Until they hadn't seen anyone for a week. With this kind of revelation that they hadn't been seen for a week, members of the town went up to the manor house to see if there was anything wrong, or to see if everyone was all right. Upon arriving, they found the manor in a state of disarray. Clothing had been pulled from wardrobes, furniture had been smashed, the grand table in the dining hall had been flipped upside down, with the full remains of a ready-to-eat meal strewn across the floor, now rotting and mouldering. Glass smashed everywhere, mirrors were cracked in the house, curtains torn from their rails. Paintings had been almost slashed and ripped apart. The manor, it looked like it had been ransacked. Thinking that it was perhaps bandits of some kind, the people searched the local area for the missing family and the missing servants, and they never found them. They disappeared like mist in the wind. But over the following months, as people still visited the manor to try and tidy things up in hopes that maybe at least someone would return or someone was left alive, on the cold nights, from the backyard of the manor, members of the town would occasionally hear a haunting wail, almost like a child's cry. And as time passed on, when the townsfolk realised that these people were never going to return, this family was never going to return, they stopped visiting the house, and it very much became a kind of a local story. Very much something that people would still speculate even the years to come of what happened to the family. And theories had been thrown around. Perhaps they picked up a cursed object and the whole family had been cursed. Perhaps the Shadowfell had interfered and they had slipped through into the cursed Shadowfell. Perhaps vampires or werewolves or bandits, nobody really knew. But it's still, as Richard tells you, he says it's still to this day, if you travel up to the manor, the old manor, which is now it's in ruins, you can still hear that haunting wail.
Well, that's an interesting story. Okay, thank you for filling me in on that. That's quite the story. There's a lot of strange things that happen in Innistrad, or across Innistrad. We've seen a few strange things ourselves, but that's something for another time, maybe.
At the mention of you seeing a few strange things yourself, and then your declaration of maybe another time, across the crowd, it ripples as a, Ah, a groan ripples across the crowd. These people have been sat on the edge of their seat listening to Richard's story. And he wove this story with the air of an experienced storyteller. He added the appropriate flares and dramatics in, the appropriate pauses to just build that tension up. And, you know, he's clearly a skilled storyteller, and everyone's been sat on the edge of their seats, and they now just want another story. And you could just feel the disappointment ripple through the crowd.
Kewin, who will have been sat listening to this, will turn... Laura, you know we were going to keep watch, possibly tonight. I don't think it will do much good. What do you lot fancy going over recce of this manor house ruin? Or would you want to leave it alone?
Well, I don't think it'd do any harm. If we're going to be out and about looking for whatever this is, we might as well do something while we're out and about. But otherwise, it's just going to get really cold if we're just standing outside a gate, isn't it?
Yeah, what do you think, Ogva?
I don't know. It's a bit of a scary story, really, isn't it?
There's loads of scary stories all over the place. You know, what fear? We have Avacyn by our side.
I can't say that a story is anything near as scary as some of the things that we've seen in the last few days.
Well, that's very true, but stories do have a tendency to have an element of truth in them, is what I'm trying to get at.
Well, yes, but look, you know, think of the adventure and all this lot, you know. We could maybe even solve everything before we go to Jenrix. It's only, you know, go up and have a see.
Ogvar.
Hello.
How does Ogvar feel about scary stories?
I'd say they scare him a wee bit, yeah.
Okay, make me a listen check, please.
Listen check. I like these. I don't like them very much. That one.
Oh dear. I'm not even going to roll for that. Okay. As you're speaking to Kewin, you are startled severely when a cold hand grabs you by the ankle.
Ooh.
And Ivona pokes her head from underneath the chair, giggling madly before running off and slipping back into the crowd.
Okay, I think it's probably best we all ignore that one. We'll pretend that one didn't happen.
I would say that she's recovering quite nicely.
Yes.
Needs to put a bit of weight on, but she's recovering quite well, isn't she?
Yes, she seems to have found some courage and some bravery from her adventures.
Obviously not your influence, then.
Possibly not, no.
Laura's going to laugh.
What do you think, Esther?
Oh.
I reckon we should go and have a little sauté up there and see what's what.
Well, I'm quite amenable to a midnight wander. Helps with digestion.
Yes. I suppose it's up to you, Alpha. Will you join us?
I suppose I wouldn't want you to go on your own, but yes, we always go together as a troop. So I suppose I'm in as well.
Ah, awesome.
Is anybody here? Have you got a mead? A glass of mead? Did you have mead or ale?
Ale.
We tend to drink ale. It's safer.
I think we promised a little person a little tiny bit of mead.
Mead.
Kewin, you made a promise.
I think we already had it.
Oh, I don't think he did he? I don't think we bought him a mead, did we?
Yeah, you dropped off.
Did we get him a mead?
We first got it.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure we went face first into a saucerful.
Oh, we did?
Yeah.
Okay.
And then almost knocked your... you.
Okay, cool. No. Okay, so what time would it be roughly now? I know the sun was going down before we started to... Because the sun was low in the sky coming through the windows, wasn't it, when we first... When everyone started piling into the tavern, but we've been chatting for a while.
Yeah, it's probably about 7:30 at night now. It's fully dark outside. You can see part of the front kind of yard of this inn illuminated by lanterns, and you can see the bridge. There's a couple of lanterns hanging in the middle of the bridge at the peak. It's fairly dark.
Well, I'll tell you what, guys, we didn't get that much sleep last night. It was really disturbed, what with like horses, random tusked creatures, and an owlbear as well. I think I'm just Laura would be just sort of like saying this under her breath to the others. I don't really want to be up all night, but it's about 7:30 now. Let's, you know, should we just get an early start on it?
What?
Yeah, just
in the
go for a jaunt. We said that we were going to go and have a look tonight, didn't we?
Richard, how far would you say it is?
I think he said it was just outside the. Oh. Sorry, continue.
Would you say, half a mile?
Oh, it's just up. If you go up through the trees, you'll find an old logging path, an old cart path up there, and just follow it, and it's on the peak of the hill. It's probably a 20-minute walk.
Oh, awesome. Okay. Brilliant. I suppose we'll get dressed up here in our gear, and off we go.
Yeah, Alora's going to nod to the mare, and she's just going to rise. She's going to... Where's Rowan at the moment?
Make me a spot check.
Oh, no. Oh, God. Spot. I've forgotten what spot is. Five. Oh, that's a 10 all in.
Okay, yeah, you catch...
Very average.
Yeah, I mean, you catch sight of Rowan. He's flitting around the room, diving in and out of different people's mugs of ale and mead. He's actually kind of by listening you hear him, because you hear a kind of sploop, and then a big splash, and then a sploop as he goes into the next one. He's taking a good sample of the drinks around the room, you'd say.
Right. Alora's just going to leave him for a minute. She's going to go upstairs and she's going to... she's just going to straighten herself out, make sure she's got her gear, grab her backpack. And then she's going to come back down and wait at the end of the bar nearest the exit to the inn. At which point she is going to recall Rowan, give him a whistle. Rowan! Come on, we've got a job to do. I want you over here with me.
Rowan flies over, dripping a trail of alcohol. He's quite slow in his movements, mostly because he's kind of... His fluffy little coat has just kind of sucked up all of the ale that he's been diving in and out of. So when you get hold of him and you grab him out of the air, you get this kind of... It's like squeezing a sponge. You get this kind of squelch noise, and then then alcohol just kind of dribbles over your hand and drips onto the floor. As you kind of wring your bat out.
Ew. That's disgusting. How can you go out like that?
Okay. Me. He doesn't respond.
Yeah, Laura's just going to wait for everybody else to come down or come to meet with her, because she doesn't know whether they're going to get staff or what they're doing.
Okay, so Ogvar and Kieran, what are you doing then?
Well, Kieran will go and make sure he's got all his equipment present and correct, and make sure he's got on his gauntlets of lightning as well, just in case, you never know. He's not going to take all his bits and pieces with him.
Okay.
Yeah, Ogvar will like go up to his room and sort of like stand in front of the mirror and give himself a bit of a pep talk.
go on, you've got this queue in.
Queue in?
You've got this on far.
Now Elora's really concerned. She was convinced there was something funny going on.
You've got this Ogvar. It's no different to what you faced underneath the cathedral in Junau. So they're just a little bit more dead than they were before. So it's you've got this, one. Let's get out there and look after the team. Now that is sort of giving Barrett a bit of a slap on the cheeks, and he's pepped up and he's ready to go. So he's gonna walk downstairs, trying to look as confident as possible.
Okay, trying to look as confident as possible. Let's see. Let's race like that.
Oh no, DM's actually looking in a book. Oh.
No, I'm not. Okay, make me a bluff check on that one.
Oh, ace, yeah. Well, it's going to be a 4 minus 1, which will give me a 3.
Okay, so, Ogvar, you come to...
Can I just have your dice, Colin?
I can see how tonight's going to go.
So, Ogvar, you come downstairs, and to everyone who looks at you, including your fellow companions, you are quite possibly paler than the ghosts you think you might encounter, apart from the two big kind of red splotches on your cheeks where you've given yourself a smack.
Stunning.
Nice, good.
You look like a haunted nutcracker doll.
Oh, no. You all right, Ogvar?
Yes, sir. Ready to go.
Have you got blusher on? Have you got rouge on your cheeks?
I don't know. Don't think so.
Oh.
I don't even know what it is.
Oh. Okay.
Right. Are you ready to go?
I'm very ready, thank you.
Okay.
He's just raring to go. It's all the excitement and blood rushing around. Oh. He's just ready.
Yes. That's what it is.
Right, okay. Are you good?
I'm always good.
Anyone seen Esther?
No, hello, dearie. I'm here.
Nope. Oh, hello, Esther.
When you look at Esther, she has got changed out of her shawl and her sandals. She is now dressed appropriately for some good old ghosty hunting. Including, she's got across her back, she does have her bug net across her back, just in case.
Lovely. Alora's going to sort of cock one eyebrow at this, thinking... What's she expecting to catch? But she doesn't ask. She just accepts that. She's going to... is everybody in the tavern still looking at all of this? Or have they just got on with the rest of their evening?
No.
Because obviously they've just got up and walked off, didn't
they? They've just got on. The story is over. You haven't provided any new stories, which is what they were hoping for. So they've just kind of gone back to their ale, gone back to their business. You know, that you hear the odd comment of, "Well, get off my turnip patch. I know you've been onto my turnip patch in the top left corner of the field. I know you have." You know, you hear these kind of little kind of everyday comments.
Is Mary behind the bar?
Yes, Mary is behind the bar. She's cleaning up some of these tankards, you know, got a rag and kind of twisting it round and next one, and yeah, she's behind the bar.
Right. Alora's going to lean over the end of the bar, which is nearest, obviously she stood nearest the door. She's going to lean over the bar and say, Mary, we're off out to, well, we're off to go and get some stories to share. Don't wait up.
Okie dokie, no
worries. And then she's gonna turn around and she's gonna just walk out the door. Laura will go out of the tavern and she'll whistle, "Rowan, come on, time to go." And then with that, she swishes out. Yeah.
You peel yourself off the bar. You've leant over it and your clothing's kind of got stuck to it because it's a bit tacky. So you peel yourself off the bar. Yeah.
Nice.
Okay, so you're all leaving the tavern out into the courtyard?
Yep.
Okay. So, you make your way through the village, you make your way over this little bridge. It's actually quite...
Is it lit? Can we actually see where we're going, or is it very dark? Are there any lanterns out there or anything?
Well, we're going through a forest, so...
We're going through the town at the moment.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, the outside of the tavern is lit. You can see some lanterns hanging by the door, some lanterns kind of placed on the wall. They're providing enough illumination to illuminate the kind of front yard area. On the bridge, okay. You do have two lanterns, one on each side at the peak of the bridge. Especially if you go over the bridge, it's actually quite an enchanting little scene. You've got the sound of the water burbling underneath and this kind of mossy, partially grown over bridge with these little lanterns lighting, illuminating it in this kind of golden hue. It's quite charming, actually. But you make your way through the town. The town is quiet. Most of the windows in the houses are dark, they're unlit. Most likely because the majority of the population is actually in the pub. So you make your way through town towards the exit. You see a guard by the entrance, the town entrance. It's not the same, it's not Uncle Al. It's a different guard. Another young man looking in his late 20s. Bit of a wispy attempt at a beard going on. And he kind of nods at you and gives you this kind of fervent little kind of head dip. And you leave the town.
So that would be the North Gate, which is where we entered in through.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's only one entrance to this town.
Right. So there's no South Gate to exit out of it?
No.
Oh, okay, right. Okay, well, we'll acknowledge the guard as we're going through. Just give him a wave. Meander through the gates, because are they closed at this point? Has he had to open them, or are they still staggered so that you have to go, like, around them?
They're still staggered. So the gates themselves were... Well, so, yeah, no, the gates weren't closed.
Okay, mm-hmm. Right, so she will sort of meander round the one gate, across past the other gate, so she's going like a bit of an S fashion, and then out through into the outside of the walls of the town.
Okay.
And she'll wait for everyone else to catch up.
Okay. So... Okay. You all leave as a group. You're not kind of going to go wander off just, you know, by your lonesome. You leave as a group. And you're going to go straight up through the woods. You're going to look for the logging path.
Yeah?
Yeah, I think we will search for the logging path. So we'll head up towards the west and then up the hill and then look for the logging path.
Okay, so you head to the forest, and make me a search check, please.
Everybody?
Yes, everybody. So it is dark. So how are you seeing anything?
Well, Laura's got. She can see out of the one eye in low light, can't she?
It's dark.
I think. Yeah, I think it's dark. Isn't it dark vision in one eye?
You can see.
Yeah.
Yeah. So she can only see, and it's. I can't remember which eye it was. I think it was a right eye. I have to go back and check. So she can see out of the eye with the eye of Avacyn. She can see out of that eye, but the other eye is obviously dark. So her peripheral vision is slightly less than it would be, but she can see.
Right. Kieran rolled an 11.
Okay.
Laura rolled a 16.
11, 16, yep.
Ogvar rolled a 14.
14. Okay, so between the three of you, you're able to find the logging path fairly easily. So Sorry, did someone say what they were using to light the way? Because I think I just completely missed that.
Not yet.
Okay. Yet. Sorry, I thought I just completely skipped that for a minute. Okay, yeah, so...
No, I'm out front and I can see out one eye at least.
Well, it seems we'd like to...
Yeah.
Lamp.
I forgot my lamp.
I've got mine with me.
Oh, right, awesome. Elora, could you possibly do that oochie-beebie, wiggly-wiggly, light up my sword?
It's just as well that Kewin can't actually see Elora's face at this point, but she is going to kind of understand what he's saying, and she's going to sort of lift her hand, cast a swish with her hand, and she's going to cast light onto the proffered sword tip.
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you. You're awesome. Ah.
Okay. So, you, with Kewin's lit sword now, you make your way up the side of the town, towards the tree line where the, obviously from looking at the map and with Uncle Al's introduction, you know that the logging camp is kind of on this particular side of the town. So you head towards the trees and you'll be able to find the logging path fairly easily. It's obviously cut through the trees, and it's a well-worn, scraped path, scraped clear of any debris, most likely because of the logs being obviously dragged over this pathway. And yeah, so you're making your way up the path and just following it, yeah?
Yes.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. So yeah, you're able to make your way up the path without any real interruptions. You do hear some sounds of wildlife. Perhaps you get startled by an owl screeching, Ogvar. Sounds eerily close to a scream. Which perhaps sets you on edge a little bit. But aside from the, you know, the odd interruption and perhaps a mouse scurrying across and bouncing across the path in front of you, it's a fairly quiet journey. The trees here are oppressive. They are fir trees. They've obviously got the needles. The ground is soft and loamy, muffling your footsteps. And it all feels quite close and quite dark. Nevertheless, you make your way up, and it doesn't take you long before you reach a section of this logging path which looks less used. The ground here is coated over with pine needles. You can see little kind of small saplings beginning to sprout out, and clearly there hasn't been any logs dragged over this part in quite a while. As you progress further up the path, it becomes a little bit more overgrown. Until you reach. Make me a spot check, everyone.
That's a 7 plus a 5 for Elora, so that's a 12 in total.
That's a 16 plus a 5, 21.
Ooh.
For Kewin. Sword.
Ogvar's got an 18 plus 11, which would be 29.
Okay, look at that. Okay, so...
Where was that earlier?
It's like a dick measuring competition over there.
As you make your way, and you're kind of... You've been walking for a good 15 to 17 minutes now. Ogvar and Kewin, from the light on the end of Kewin's sword... You catch sight, buried, kind of half collapsed and almost overgrown by bramble and brush. You see what looks to be part of a gatepost. It's a magnificent gatepost made of stone, and atop of it you can see a griffin. But the griffin is obviously in some state of disrepair. It's broken, it's cracked, the head lies on the floor. One of the wings has been broken off and is completely missing. And it's covered with lichen and moss, giving it this very mottled look. And the stone, you can imagine it was probably once quite a light-coloured stone. Over the years of neglect and obviously disuse, it's turned into kind of a very dark stone. And this is the first real sign that you get that you're approaching Stonewell Hall. As you travel up the path further, you eventually see a tumble-down property wall. It stretches off in both directions. At points, it's been completely crumbled, completely overgrown. You can see brambles have kind of grown over the other side, and they're dripping over the top of the wall, trailing down to the floor. And as you pass through the gap where this path runs through, you can see two big wrought iron gates. One has been completely torn off its hinges, and it clearly torn. You can see that where they were bolted into this stone, it's been ripped out. You can see the stone around it is cracked and crumbling away. It has clearly been some force has been applied to this. And this one gate lays on the ground partway into the path, completely grown over by grass and other bits of, you know, nature and wildlife. And the other one hangs at a 45 degree angle, twisted and bent. And as you look ahead of you, obviously it's very dark and you can't see much, but as you draw closer, you begin to see the hulking outline of a building. Okay.
I think this is it, guys. Those gates are a bit of a mess. How the hell have they got into that state? I mean, I know it's been a lot of years, but...
I don't know you, Arthur. I mean, you know a bit more about the older, maybe a bit stonework than me. You know, because you're family.
Yes.
But I'd say those gates have been ripped out by a tremendous force.
Well, yes, they do. The stone's quite sturdy, as you can see, and the gates themselves would be quite heavy. And say it's taken either someone very strong, or maybe some a lifting aid, or just something that's very large. I'm not entirely sure which one, but
yes, I think we're just having a look, but I'd say that we need to up air. Attention.
So be on our guard then, yeah?
Be on our guard. That's the word.
Okay, Esther, you on your guard?
No, yes, I'm on my guard, yes. And when you look at her, she's taken her net from her back and she's got it grasped in both hands, ready to swoosh.
Are you looking for moths?
Could be. You never know what kind of beasties are going to attack next. Might be a mosquito around here.
I'd say that's highly likely, but he's the one with the light in his sword, so I guess they're going to go for Kieran first.
Hmm. Quite right. And as she says that, she moves to hover over your shoulder, Kieran.
Kieran, you've got a shadow.
Okay.
Come on, Kieran. You've got the light. You go up for, let's follow you through.
I'll go first. You follow me.
Yeah,
I see.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Oh, yes, I must agree.
Come
right,
on, Ogvar.
Looks like it's... I'll go first. Okay. Right. How exciting. So, Kieran's got a shield on the one arm, and he's got his lighted... bastard sword on the other one, and he's ready.
Okay.
Oh. Right.
Okay.
Yeah, so I guess we walk in.
The townsfolk settled in silence as the mayor told the strangely spooky story of Stonewell Hall. Allura avoided adding any tales of her own, instead electing to engage her companions in a little reconnaissance ramble to further scrutinise Stagwick's desiccation dilemma. Ogvar, apparently oddly jumpy, returned to his room a little pale of pallor, and a little pep talk was needed as he muttered to himself in his mirror. Meanwhile, down in the bar, Rowan was having a terrific time taking a tipple from everyone's tankards while their attention was focused elsewhere. Our party reconvened, and in short order, they stepped outside of Stagwick to see if they could get to the bottom of the town's bothers. Hey, you made it this far, so lend us your ears for a moment longer if you will. Firstly, we are most humbled that you are enjoying our yarn, and the crew thank you from the bottom of their hearts for your patronage. Producing this podcast is incredibly hard work, and as such, if you would like to support us, there are a few ways in which you could really make a difference. Sharing links to friends and family helps to spread the word so others like you can find us, and in turn they too can enjoy the show. Equally helpful is leaving a 5-star review on Spotify and any other streaming services, which will help us immensely. Or, if you feel you could go that extra mile and contribute a few coppers to keep our creative juices flowing, you can hop on over to our Buy Me a Coffee page or drop us an email. We would all be immensely grateful for your support in any form. Lastly, we invite you to visit our website, where you will find information on our campaign from backstories to settings. Join our Facebook group or follow us on Twitter. All the links are in our episode bios. Don't forget to smash the subscribe and download buttons so you never miss the next episode. See you all again next week, folks.